We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to In the Know. We're kicking off the Pelican season. The Pelicans just played against the Rockets. I'm Shamit, joined by Mason. Mason, I want to hear your thoughts. How was this game?
You don't sound nearly excited enough.
I'm trying to control myself, man. You have no idea. Okay, just wait till it's my turn to talk.
I was gonna say I want to say we should restart that fresh again, but it's late and I don't want to go to sleep. Actually, I don't want to go to sleep, but I kind of have to. But that game was, because how can you want to go to sleep after a game like that? I'm tired. It was so fun. From start to finish. I mean, there's so many good things to talk about with this game. But like, that's the first one. Like I tweeted out at the end of halftime. My dad texts me. He says, "Can we just give Houston 10 points and move straight to the fourth quarter?" And I said, you know, that's probably not a bad idea. But we kept even. We were crushing them until we kind of lost a little bit of focus late in the third quarter. Like, we were extending the lead to almost 30. And so that was just new for this team. Or not new, but that's not what we saw consistently from this team last year. And granted, we have to keep saying it throughout this pod, too. It's only one game. But they clearly wanted this. You saw not just the continuity of the guys who have been there, but I could not have asked for better starts from the two new guys in Elfrid Payton and Julius Randle. Just those two guys were active on both ends, Payton specifically on defense. You know, I've as much as we always talk about don't buy into anything in the preseason, and as bad as the Pelicans defense was in the preseason, I didn't care about that. But I did kind of care a little bit about how Elfrid Payton looked. And like, as good as Julius Randle looked in the preseason for the Pels, Elfrid really didn't. And you can throw all that away now. And I'm not saying he's going to be as good this season as he was tonight either, but he clearly looked on both ends engaged. He hustled. He was hounding Chris Paul, just chasing him all over the floor, making things as difficult as he could for him. That's the one thing that really made me feel good about this game above all else, was how those two guys came in to a team that otherwise has pretty strong level of continuity and look like they belong. And that bodes very well for the next few weeks, next few months. So that's my top top takeaway. So you're up.
I feel like you spent so much time talking about Elfrid Payton, yet completely neglected to mention that he leads the league in triple doubles and is the odds on MVP favorite. I mean,
that's how this works.
That's how it works. AD was great, but let me tell you about Payton. He had the most roundest 10, 10, and 10. I mean, it's so aesthetically pleasing. But in seriousness, like, I don't think you can say enough good things about Payton. Yeah, like, the field goal percentage isn't something to write home about, but I didn't think I saw him make one decision where I was like, dude, what are you doing?
He had one meh pass, yeah. Half-court pass, AD, where it's like, okay, you're getting to play with the best player you've ever played with in your career, and you want to kind of stretch the limitations there. But, yeah, besides that,
yeah.
That's all I saw.
And it's easy to get caught up in, like, the high-octane offense that we were just running throughout the whole game. And obviously he's like, yeah, let's make some highlight plays. Let's run it up on the Rockets. I don't blame him for making that pass. But, geez, man, literally – every single Pelican, well, I guess the starters plus Randall, they just balled out, just totally balled out. Like, if you could script something and just be like, all right, I want every single Pelican to do well. Like, you know, like on Twitter, we're always hyping up all our role players. It's like these guys played as well as we hyped them up to be.
Yeah.
You know? And sure, like, they're going to have their downs going into the season. But you know what? Forget that. It's one night, and I want to enjoy this night. And they balled out. They beat the second-best team in the league that makes them the second-best team in the league, in my eyes, until they beat the brakes off the Warriors, and then they'll be the best team in the league. That's exactly how this works, and it's exactly how it's going to continue to work. And I couldn't be even more – I couldn't be more excited about the future of this season.
I think now we've been spoiled with the Blazers sweep, and I feel like after game one of that Blazers series, we're like, all right, that was cool. We probably won't even win the series still, but that was really cool. And then we swept them, and now it's all of a sudden like, why can't that just keep going? Why can't that continue? Like, the only evidence we have over the past, you know, since February is that the Pelicans are probably not better than the Warriors. That's all we know. Let's just keep riding the wave. But yeah, I mean, I think we're we're in agreement here. We know that it's just one game, but at the same time, everyone who will matter for this team to really make a move in the Western Conference played exactly how you'd want them to play in the first game of the season. I mean, if you just look at the numbers, the only thing that kind of makes you say, oh wait, what? Was the Jrue Holiday only scored 10 points, but he was 0 of 6 from 3, so that could have easily been different. We heard him mention, you know, during the preseason that was one of the things he was focused on improving, because he's been a better 3-point shooter than he shot it last season. And so, I mean, he's easily a couple of Nico's threes that fell that were ridiculous could have fallen for Jrue instead. And so, you know, again, one game, not going to read too much into that for Holiday, but he led the team he was second in the team in plus minus behind each one more, however that happened to work out. But yeah, everyone filled the roles. I know we'll talk more about some of the unique things that these guys did in this game, AD's assists being one such thing. But yeah, I mean, is there one thing that you would say surprised you pleasantly about the game that you really didn't expect, besides the fact that we beat the Rockets?
I feel like our rebounding was legit. Like, we started off kind of being sloppy in the first quarter. We got beat to some 50-50 balls, but then I guess they talked about it in a timeout or something, and they ramped it up, and the rebounding, we ended up out-rebounding them 54-37. That's great. I mean, not like the Rockets have many bigs or people that are going to beat you up down there, but again, I feel like rebounding has been somewhat of a problem point in the past, and it looked like it was a problem point in the preseason, and just to come out there and get the job done on the defensive glass, but not only that, the offensive glass, they had 14 offensive rebounds.
Nico had seven.
Like, what?
That's absurd. The Rockets had 8.
Right. And that's a change of pace as well. I mean, that you mentioned Drew shooting. He had the toughest assignment of the night. He was going up against the league's MVP in James Harden, and he held Harden to 6 of 15 shooting and only 18 points with 4 turnovers. I mean, it takes a lot of work to play 38 yep. minutes of defense against a guy like that. And, you know, Drew had, what, a couple steals. He had a couple deflections. He had a couple, like, he had a lot of great stops on drives. And meanwhile, you know, like, Alfred helped out a lot against CP3. Like, both those guys, Harden and CP3, like, CP3 ended up scoring a couple points in garbage time, or, like, 6 points or so in garbage time, like, one off an and one, one off a three. So, you know, he finished the night with 19 points, but in the minutes that mattered that he played, he effectively had 13 points. Like, he was all right. He wasn't that great. And
yeah.
I mean, the main thing I saw from Alfred was he was the hustle. He was actually fighting off screens. He was going after rebounds. I mean, he finished with 10. He hit the floor like so many times. Just the amount of energy and effort, and it's kind of noticeable because like people are talking about the preseason and they were like, well, I don't know how Alfred looks. These guys don't look all that interested. It's like, yeah, no shit, it's preseason. And now they're playing the opening night against one of the best teams in the league on national television. Of course they're going to try harder. Yep. So I'm hoping hoping they keep the same energy for the Kings on Friday.
Yeah, yeah. And I think after a game like this, you get the – obviously, the early season Pelicans are – they're the support and the kind of the amount of – emphasis that people put on the basketball is often dependent on how good the Saints are, and the fact the Saints are good, maybe we worry, are people going to care about the Pelicans? But this is a statement win for a team that came off a first round sweep, and I think you're going to see that there's enough love to go around in New Orleans for two teams that are playing as well as the Saints and Pelicans are. So I think the atmosphere is going to be pretty electric in the Smoothie King Center on Friday night, and I'm very much looking forward to it. And man, I not to keep talking about Peyton, but I have to. I know we have some people, some locals who watched Peyton more in college than I did at ULL, and I know he was renowned for his defense there, and I know he's very much not renowned for his defense in the NBA. And you've got to figure that the hustle we saw tonight is a lot of what made him such a good defender in college. Because you against college matchups, especially in, I don't know if when he was there, when they were in the Sun Belt or Conference USA or what conference they were in when he was there, but you can get by with athleticism and hustle a long way, especially on defense in college ball. And that's got to be how, how he made a name for himself on that end of the floor. And to see it actually pay off within the Pelican system, at least for a game tonight, was pretty refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing, I feel like the biggest point of evidence towards that is James Harden had five free throws. He made four. No, he had four free throws.
Four free throws,
and Chris Paul had five free throws. Those guys are cheat codes at getting to the free throw line, and to hold them to a combined 9 free throws when they can each do that a piece is fantastic. Speaking of the defense, AD had a interesting quote at the end of the game about defense. He says, "I told y'all the other day we'd be fine defensively, but y'all didn't believe me. We just try to get into the ball and try to make it uncomfortable for them. That was the adjustment. Make these guys feel our presence and nothing too easy for them." So, like, AD is basically calling out all the people that were freaking out about the preseason. And, yeah, I mean, it's good to know that when this team cares, they can sit down and play defense. Now, to be fair, the Rockets aren't really a team that move the ball a lot. It's a lot of isolation. And so a lot of the creative trickery of, let's say, Golden State or even Utah, where there's a lot of player and ball movement, isn't there with the Rockets. So the Pelicans, I think, did a really good job even in those isolation situations, providing the right amount of help. And sure, it burned them a couple times on open threes. I think the Rockets made 16 threes, which is a lot of threes.
They took 48.
Yeah, they took 48. But for the most part, you know, I think we'll have to, I don't think the stats are out yet, but like, I felt like they did a really good job of protecting the rim and the paint. I really don't know what those numbers are. Hopefully I can find them soon. But
yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Like I think there are a couple guys who did a pretty good job. I think, you know, weirdly enough, I think Eric Gordon was the best guy they had at getting through him. He seemed like he was being able to, he was able to do it with some relative success. That being said, he was often doing it with, you know, maybe not against the starters. He was able to get past Etuan Moore a few times. And we talked about before we started recording that, I mean, PJ Tucker, I think, did a really good job, and without his shooting, this game's over even sooner. Yeah. And so, apart from that, I think the game plan was sound. They forced guys like Carmelo and Michael Carter Williams to beat them, and I'll take that. I'll take that chance any day of the week. I think we were both pretty surprised at how, specifically with Carter Williams, how many minutes he played. I just think he was.
Dude, he had the highest plus minus on that team. So as far as Morey is concerned, he's their best player at the moment. So he should get more minutes. I feel like, no, I'm. It's crazy how he looked terrible, and I feel like he's the reason our bench was able to not totally blow the lead. Our bench outside of Randall wasn't great. We only played an 8-man rotation, and Miller and Solomon Hill were basically invisible.
Yep.
But yeah. I don't anticipate that to continue. And I also don't anticipate us having a 8-man rotation. I feel like with Tim Frazier and Wesley Johnson and Ian Clark, we'll push around 9 to 10, especially against teams like the King. I think this is a game that they kind of treated it as like a playoff game. They probably spent a similar amount of time game planning, and they just really wanted to win. So,
yeah, I mean, it's as simple as the playoff picture last season. Like, there were two or three games separating 6-7 teams, and every game matters. And I have absolutely no problem with tightening your rotation for the very first game of the season, as long as you're not overextending anyone. And I think Gentry did a great job, because even with the 8-man rotation, AD played 39 minutes. So he kept, and he had the most minutes on the team. He kept everyone under 40. Obviously day off tomorrow before they play the Kings. And so I've again, no problems with it. And I think like you said, with the additions of Wes Johnson, Frazier, and we have, and Frank Jackson and Ian Clark, and they've got the guys to, you know, to extend the rotation for against most teams. I'm sure Gentry felt like smaller players like Clark and like Frank Jackson might not be on switches against guys like Paul and Harden. Could be, I mean, Paul's short, but he's strong, he's stocky. Could have been difficult for them, and so this group made the most sense for tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to get your thoughts on how you think the Pelicans are going to approach the idea of playing my boy Timmy Frazier. Do you feel like he's going to get a significant run? I feel like he needs a dedicated section on this podcast, because we just acquired him and he's a Pelicans legend. And as far as we know, like, Anthony Davis just loves Tim Frazier. They're big boys. And do you think he's going to be a mainstay in the rotation coming up, or, you know, he'll get a spot here or there?
Hard to say. After this performance Elfrid Payton put on, because, in a sense, to me, he was insurance if Elfrid Payton really just didn't work out, and the guy we saw in Phoenix and Orlando was the same guy we're getting in New Orleans. That being said, it's pretty clear at this point. Most every point guard who fits Gentry's style is gonna put up numbers. It seems like, I mean, that's kind of like the Steve Nash argument with D'Antoni back in Phoenix.
Let me rephrase that. Most point guards that play next to Anthony Davis are going to put up numbers. You remember Gravis Vasquez's rookie year?
that's fair, and that's probably the better way to phrase it. But
but Davis plus Gentry in this new high-powered offense? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and like he was granted the last time Frazier was in New Orleans, AD wasn't playing as much of the five as he is now. They gave more minutes to guys like Ajinsa and Omar Asik but minutes when you're looking today, minutes when Frazier played the point and AD played the five, the Pelicans are a strong team. And now you've got Drew, who's way more comfortable off ball now than he was when Tim Frazier was on the team. I mean, there are rotations that certainly make sense. The question is, can you find minutes, especially when you look at the roster right now and see that, you know, Frank Jackson and Ian Clark both didn't play at all really today. Whose minutes does he take is the question. And that's a tough one to answer. But at the same time, if AD wants him playing, I think they can find some minutes for him. But his defense has never been good, and he's a small guard. So that's going to be tough to figure out. But
yeah, I think anytime they just need that little like shot in the arm where just maybe there's like a lull, maybe someone's just not getting the job done and they just need someone to just run. That's my boy's Tim's time to shine.
I think that's Ryan's boy.
Oh, okay, Ryan, we're going to have to fight. The winner gets to host a podcast.
So back to you on a different player they recently acquired, which is Wes Johnson. I know we had some preconceived notions on the Pelicans' wing depth off the bench, but are you now more inclined to give? So Friday, Wes Johnson, I'm assuming is active. Do you give him all of Solomon Hill's minutes? Do you give him some of Solomon Hill's, some of Darius Miller's minutes? What do you do to see if he is a guy who can make your team better than the current wings that you have done on the bench?
I mean, if I had final say, I would give all of Solo Hill's minutes to Wes Johnson. End of story. Like, no questions asked. You go out there, let me see what you got, and then if you really suck too, then we can start thinking about bringing Solo back. But realistically, Solo's going to play. He's been on the team. Kind of need him to play a little if you want to trade him eventually. Maybe you can pull something from him. Maybe he still has something he can show you. I think Solo's going to play. He only played 12 minutes tonight. Definitely not going to play more than that. Maybe he plays 5. I don't know. It's such a...
That's my thing. It's like, if Solo Hill played 25 minutes tonight or 20, 25 off the bench, and he's like a real meaningful rotation piece, that's one thing. But I just don't think, as far as you mentioned trading him, I don't think the difference between playing 12 minutes off the bench and playing 0 is a tangible difference. And so I think what you said is more of a possibility than maybe you give it credit for, is saying give Wes Johnson all of Solo's minutes and see what happens.
It is a tangible difference. If Solo Hill is going to tank your offense every night, not playing him any minutes might be a slight improvement, addition by subtraction.
That's not the direction I was trying to take that, but fair enough. My point was more just that I don't know if any team's going to be like, oh, well, Solomon Hill can play 12 minutes a night. That's better rotation piece than if he was playing 0 minutes a night. I just don't – even if he was a net neutral and not tanking your team with those 12 minutes, like, I just don't think this difference. And so I don't know. And also couple that with the fact that, again, they only played an 8-man rotation tonight. So it's probably going to be the starters who play a few fewer minutes and not the guys who came off the bench. But
yeah, ideally you know, each one played 33. Like, I think he averages around 27 for the season. Yeah. Drew played 38. You know, in some games he'll average like 33, 35. Mm-hmm. Alfred played 36, which before tonight, did anyone anticipate Alfred playing 36 minutes a game? I think most people had him around like 25, 27, right?
Yep.
So I think some of those minutes will go to the wing players, less so than the guards, just to try different defensive looks. Julius only played 23 minutes, which is nuts. But again, like I didn't feel like he was short on minutes.
He also scored 25 points in those minutes.
Yeah, and like his usage was probably absurdly high. Let me see if I can pull up this usage real quick. His usage was 27. That's real solid. AD's usage was only 26.
And he had zero turnovers, Randall.
Yeah, Randall played about as well as you could hope. He had a couple defensive lapses, just like a little late on the rotation. And there's a couple times where like he got hit under the basket and he kind of did the boogie thing, but it wasn't the boogie thing because Boogie just stands there talking to the ref and then walks back. Where Randall had a couple words and then he kind of like ran back. So like,
I feel like Randall did a decent job though of staying, and this is one area where I think Nico may have struggled a little bit tonight, but I think Randall did a good job of staying in front of some of the guards when he got switched onto them, guys like Paul and Harden.
Definitely.
I think he made life difficult for those guards, and that's an element that we didn't really have last year.
I guess him like Houston. There was a drive I remember specifically. Harden isolated him and took him to the rim, and Randall backpedaled and had his arms vertical and stopped the drive really well. Yep. He had a couple nice passes to AD. Those two had pretty good chemistry going on.
Wouldn't you see plays like that? I don't think we got a single minute with all three of those guys on the floor together, Nico, AD, and Randall. But I mean, if Randall can defend like that in space, at least, you know, decently well, like why do you even need someone like Solomon Hill on the floor? Like I don't know. I mean, and again, for the sixth time on this pod already, I know it's one game, but
I feel like one game, it's a one game that kind of defines their ceiling, right? This is how good they can be if they can be consistent, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. it doesn't get much better than this. It's about as perfect as a game you can play.
I feel like that's kind of depressing, even though they played it, even though they won by 20. I hate to feel like the game one of the season is the best they can play. I mean, maybe this is
I mean, I don't mean it in a sense that they. Let me walk that back a little bit, because I don't mean it in the sense that it's only downhill from here. I mean it in the sense that like this is. They did a damn good job tonight, and there are very few areas where we can find fault in. And so, like, any meaningful improvements they make, because I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, just because they didn't mess up tonight doesn't mean they can't improve. Because I do think that the more they play, the more chemistry they have, the more comfortable they'll get. But, I mean, it's just... They're just out there playing basketball. Like, I feel
that's a hot take.
I know, right? That's a hot take. But I feel like, in terms of chemistry, I think Drew made a comment on it after the game. Like, they had just had really good chemistry, and you don't want to like beat the drum on that cliche, but they just looked like they were having fun, and they looked like I don't know. They just looked like they were just enjoying themselves.
Yeah. One other thing I think about is that. You know, we heard a ton last year about how the trio of Harden, Paul, and Capella were like, they lost like under five games together all season, were just incredible. Capella was a total non-factor. I mean, he caught a couple alley-oops, but like a ton of centers in the league would have caught those alley-oops. Like what kind of value did he even add for the Rockets against Pelicans tonight? Like, I don't think he did anything.
It's hilarious because, like, in the playoffs, he, like, embarrassed Karl Anthony Towns. He, like, ran the floor with Rudy Gobert, and now he's matched up against Anthony Davis, and he looks like Hilton Armstrong.
That's a name.
I mean, what, he was 4-for-9. He had 8 points on 9 shots and 8 rebounds. And AD was getting whatever he wanted on him. And I think part of it, like, part of the nullification was just AD being an incredible defender in the pick and roll, right? Because if they're using Mirotić's man to set the screen and isolate Mirotić, then AD is just not going to pay attention to Capella at all. And he wasn't. Mm-hmm. Anytime Capella wasn't involved in any of the main actions, AD did not care where he was and just wrecking that offense. And then if you involve AD in the pick and roll, like, well, good luck. It's AD.
Yeah, like, you know things are going well for you when you're not – when your game plan is not, hey, let's get Clint Capella to the free throw line. Like, right. If that's – he shot zero free throws. And, like, when you're not even thinking about that, things are clicking. And it's – I mean – again, like the offensive rating with Capella on the floor for the Rockets tonight was 98.3,
sustainable. Which is
insane.
So, can we officially say that we've handed the Rockets two losses with their trio healthy now? Like,
just, yeah. I mean, we did. I mean, granted, the last one was the horrible Boogie game, as in he got Torres Achilles, not horrible in that sense that they played poorly because they played awesome. But yeah, I mean, I think the Rockets know to take the Pelicans seriously at this point.
I think most should know. Do. Everyone's got to take them seriously.
Yeah. So
put on notice.
Yeah, but your point was, I think you made it right before we started recording that conversely, the Pelicans' defensive rating with AD on the floor was 98.8, which is just also certainly sustainable. But the team, the second best single game D rating on the team was Elfrid Payton.
Yeah.
Again, it's hard to you can't really pull much out of a stat like that. But I think the Capella one is something you can't draw a conclusion from. It's like they couldn't run an offense with him on the floor.
If the Pelicans can keep rebounding like they did tonight, their defense will be pretty fine over the course of the season. I'm not worried about them defending in half court. I'm not that worried about them defending in transition unless they're like coughing the ball up 20 times a game. It's when teams get cheap baskets from offensive rebounds that scares me. And so if they can keep focused on just sending everybody to the rim, because they had three different people with 10-plus rebounds tonight. I mean, Mirotić had 10, AD had 16, Elfrid had 10, Julius had 8, total team job. So if they can keep applying that pressure, and also helps, like, when you don't miss shots, gives the opponent less chances to rebound.
Yeah, and that's another reason why the Julius Randle addition is so nice. Like, just because the motor is just nonstop, and, like, even if you're not a skilled rebounder specifically, as long as your motor keeps going, you never stop moving, you're gonna be trouble on the glass. And I think Randle had his defensive rebound percentage was 24%, which is only 80s was better. And you could see it. I mean, the guy fought, and it was weird looking at the, like, when we just looked at the total offensive rebounds and saw Nico had 7, I felt like it was Randle who was always the one that was super active on the offensive glass, and maybe Nico benefited from that. I have to go back and watch the film, but it was, and he's all over the
crashing every time. I loved it. And I think, I don't know if you noticed, but I felt like AD and Randle had a good yin-yang. Like, when Randle had the ball, AD was crashing the glass. AD had the ball, Randle was crashing the glass. I felt like they were alternating on when to do it. And the fact that Randle hit 2 threes, like, that's pretty cool, too.
Yeah, I didn't – you know, we saw him shoot it in the preseason, but didn't really didn't expect that. I think I saw someone tweet out that he shot – I don't know, that he may have taken 4 threes in a game, like 3 times in his career. I don't know what the stat was, but like, he doesn't usually take threes. And the fact that he's not only taking them, but shooting them with confidence and making them, I don't want that to become like a trend for him. I don't want him shooting a bunch of threes. I think we probably agree on that, but I think the fact that he's proven at least his decent stroke certainly doesn't hurt.
Yeah. I mean, I'd much rather he take that three than pull up in mid range anyway. Mm-hmm. Feel like the expected value on his three is going to be much higher. And, you know, the coolest thing was he was hitting his free throws tonight, which is also something I'm going to be watching for going forward.
Yeah. It's just like, I mean, you look through the box score and there's just like not, there's just so little to be upset about. It's, it's weird. But I'll certainly take it. And it's a heck of a start.
So, you had the pleasure of watching the GOAT, Joel Myers, and David Wesley, I had the pleasure of watching the ESPN broadcast with Jeff Van Gundy, and honestly, I don't know who the second guy was. Yeah. But, no, I just wanted to get your take on how Joel and David felt for the season, felt for this game. Did they have anything, any interesting comments? Were they hyped? Were they tempered? What was the feel?
Yeah, I mean, it was a classic Joel-David game. Not a lot jumped out as surprising or different. I mean, just a class act and great coverage end to end. We even got the A team for halftime and post game analysis with Nancy Lieberman and Antonio Daniels. So like just every part of the broadcast was great. Jen Hale's sideline reports were also very on point as to what, you know, the Pelicans needed to address, I guess, which was the pace and the no longer having Rajon Rondo. So they talked about how fast Pelicans are playing, talked about Alfred Payton's great game, just end to end. Great stuff. And then, like I said, I love listening to – I think Nancy's one of the best analysts out there. And then yeah, I love Antonio Daniels' energy as well. He doesn't you see some of these ex-NBA players that kind of go off on tangents. We see the TNT guys all the time, and like maybe we don't agree with a lot of what they say, but I feel like I find myself agreeing with a lot of what Antonio Daniels has to say. And so, I mean, just all aspects of the broadcast tonight were no Del Harris was pretty much that's as long as there's no Del Harris, we're good in my opinion. But it was a lot of good stuff.
Dude, so I felt like this was about as good as a Jeff Van Gundy broadcast as you can get. But let me take it from the top. Before the game, they had the crew of
Paul Pierce.
I think
segment.
It was like Jalen Rose, Paul Pierce, Chauncey Billups, and I'm leaving someone off. Kristen Ledlow? No, anywho, they had that crew, and they were leading with, how do we get Anthony Davis traded away from the Pelicans? And they were just going off about how, you know, the team is probably not going to be that good. They're not going to be a top 3-4 seed, et cetera, et cetera. And Paul Pierce was all about trying to get AD to the Celtics, and everyone was super hyped about that. So that was like, okay, whatever. But then Jeff Van Gundy did a pretty good job. They mentioned that the Pelicans led the league in pace last year, which is interesting information found on a national broadcast you don't usually get. Then they had a couple rants mid-game. They had a segment where they were talking about how good it is to be a billionaire because the Rockets owner and the Texans owner or whatever, there's a bunch of billionaires at the game, and they get awesome seats. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, yeah, I'm sure it's great being a billionaire. Who would have thought? And then there was a moment in the middle of the game. I guess this is, you know it's a blowout when Jeff Van Gundy is like, how good is it to be a Houston sports fan? The Texans are great. They're 3-3, and we're gonna knock off 9 wins in a row. And it's like they were talking about the Texans in the middle of a national TV game with two MVP level players. So you could tell that he was super into it. But it's kind of ironic given, you know, how well the Saints are doing and how the Pelicans just beat the brakes off the Rockets. How good of a time is it to be a New Orleans sports fan? I mean, like, even with LSU doing so well.
It's funny because I think as soon as the Rockets game ended and people – not that people were watching the Rockets game to begin with in Houston tonight, but as soon as the Rockets game ended, the script flipped and the Astros fell behind the Red Sox. So I don't think anything's going well for Houston tonight. That is – I mean, it's funny because things are – this is a pretty awesome time to be a sports fan in, you know, New Orleans / Baton Rouge right now. I mean, the top three teams in the state are all – limited sample size for NBA aside, all crushing it. And so it's you know, we've got the MVP candidate of the NFL in Breeze, and LSU, much to my chagrin, is playing very well. but yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, And it's also weird they went on a Texans rant when it's the Astros who are trying to get to the World Series, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, on the whole, like, Van Gundy was pretty decent. He was, you know, nothing but complimentary over Anthony Davis, of course, but also, like, very, very praising of Alfred Payton and Drew and Randall and Miritich and the whole crew. They even Etuan Moore. And they're talking about how good of a job Coach Gentry has done to get them to play with pace and lock in on defense. So on the whole, like, it was a pretty solid broadcast. And obviously when the game was over, they switched back to the Paul Pierce crew, and Paul Pierce was like, the Pelicans were good, but the Rockets just sucked and their defense was really bad. And it's like, okay, dude. All right.
Of course.
Yeah, so the broadcast was fine.
Yeah, I mean, like, as long as you set your expectations the right way.
Right. I'm not expecting them to be fantastic or anything.
Yeah. Cool. Well, yeah, I know we're not, you know, probably don't want to extend this too much longer, and I think we should have any thoughts on the upcoming games. So we got the Kings next, which, you know, fingers crossed that's a W. And you can't take anyone in the Western Conference lightly. The
Kings are what? It's 95-89. Utah's winning, so they're up 6 points.
Oh, it's close again.
10 minutes left in the fourth. So I'm rooting for the Kings to pull off this upset. I'm hoping my boy Buddy just goes off. What's he got right now? Buddy has 13 points. Not bad. Who's going off? Willie Cauley-Stein has 20 points. So much for Rudy Gobert being the Defensive Player of the Year. Rudy Gobert is a negative 11 at the moment. You get out of here, Rudy Gobert. Come on. You let Willie Cauley-Stein go 9 for 11.
I've only recently heard someone call him Rudy Gogurt, and that just makes me laugh every time, and I can't even explain why. It's just too funny.
I mean, De'Aaron Fox is doing pretty well. The Kings are playing well. It's 97-93, four-point game. Maybe I should turn this game on.
Dante Exum is plus 26 in 19 minutes. That's impressive. But, I mean, like, how the Kings bench must be so bad because the Kings are so bad.
Yeah, but Ricky Rubio is negative 22, which sucks because I have him in fantasy, and I was really counting on him to be good. He's 0 for 4 with 1 point.
I didn't even think about it. I feel like when the schedule comes out, we just look at who the first opponents are. And the Pelicans have a pretty, which I don't, and this may be more reason why Gentry did what he did tonight, but it's a pretty damn spaced out schedule for the first few games.
Yeah.
They got Friday, then not till Tuesday, and then they have another couple of days off where they play Friday. And, it's a four-game homestand that ends with, of course, after a bunch of spaced-out games, they play the second of a back-to-back against Utah, which, of course, that would happen. But, man, like, the Pelicans should start 4-0. Like, now that we've beaten Houston on the road, they should start 4-0.
Man, don't jinx us.
I know. But I feel like we would have said that no matter what happened tonight. Is that the Pelicans should win the next three games at home against Sacramento, the Clippers, and Brooklyn. I like the Clippers and the fact that we're getting them quote-unquote healthy.
Our next three are at home, you're saying?
Yep.
Yeah, we better win those games.
Yeah, and hopefully you – I mean, again, I think Brooklyn might be a little underrated too this year, but hopefully you can take care of business with Brooklyn early enough that you can rest up for Utah. But, man – this is just—it just feels like classic scheduling, where you've got these bad teams super spaced out, and then you've got a second out of a back-to-back against Utah, and then you travel to Denver 2 days later, and then to Golden State 2 days after that.
Yeah,
and then a second out of a back-to-back at Portland after that. Just like, I would much prefer having normal spaced out schedule.
Yeah. Oh well, that's why you got to make these games count now. You know, build up that equity early. But you know, looking around the league, I think. We can be happy that, you know, OKC already has a loss. Minnesota already has a loss. Memphis is never going to be a factor. I don't think they were, but they have a loss. They got beat by the, like beat, I'm telling you, by the Pacers. And then Phoenix looks to be, like, running up on Dallas. So, Western Conference picture, you know, I guess it's way too early to be looking at standings, but you can't ever hurt.
Yeah, I mean, and the Clippers are still hanging with Denver. That would be nice for them to steal that. I mean, it's a home game for the Clippers, but it'd be nice for them to get that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's cool. Good enough to call it a night.
Yeah, I think that was, like, I mean, all smiles over here. I'm still kind of in a little bit of disbelief about how that game worked out. I would have been pretty disappointed if the Pelicans had gotten blown out. I did think they would put up a good fight. The spread, I think, was Houston by 8. I felt like the Pelicans had a pretty good chance to cover that. But I don't think any of us expected what happened this evening. And so,
literally the perfect night.
Yeah, pretty fired up. Let's hope they can.
As far as we know, no one got hurt. So that's the best part.
Yeah. Of course, like Randall walks off the floor to pee or has a bloody nose or something, and we're all panicking, which is just life as a Pelicans fan, I guess. But
yeah, I feel like our buttholes are collectively going to clench anytime someone goes into the locker room. That's just a rite of passage for this fandom.
Yeah,
and if you're ever in a situation where you don't experience that, then you are living in good times, sir or ma'am.
on that note, awesome.
Right, well,
thanks. We'll call it. Yeah, talk to you guys soon.